It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum of the Weekly number 25. And just before we get into the news from this week and some of the issues that we want to discuss from a Christian perspective, let me welcome anyone who's a new listener to this, because there are new listeners and they come from all over the world. In fact, last week I was surprised to see that so many came from Thailand. So welcome to our Thai listeners. And by the way, if you wish to support this podcast, then you can go to the webpage, theweflea.com, and get the podcast there or on Podbean or whatever and support our Patreon. But let's get into the issues. And we really do have to begin with the big issue here in the UK, which actually does impact other parts of the world as well. And that is the continued burach, which is a Scottish word meaning total mess. Regarding Brexit.
Order! Order!
The ayes to the right, 202. Ooh. The noes to the left, 432.
On a point of, indeed, point of order, the Prime Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the House has spoken and the government will listen. It is clear that the House does not support this deal, but tonight's vote tells us nothing about what it does support. Nothing about how... Nothing about how or even if it intends to honour the decision the British people took in a referendum Parliament decided to hold. And people, particularly EU citizens who've made their home here...
Now, on Tuesday this past week, the government had a proposal which had been accepted by the European Union, an agreement done over 2 years, and that government proposal was defeated by a massive 200 plus votes. It is the largest defeat ever in British parliamentary history over government. In normal circumstances, the government would have resigned and we would have had a general election, but these are not normal circumstances and these are not normal times. And so on Wednesday night, there was a confidence vote held in the government. And again, in normal circumstances, you would expect a government to lose that, but they haven't. And in fact, they won it, I think, 325 to 306. And so we shoulder on. Now, how have we ended in this mess and what's the problem? Just for those who are listening from other countries or even in the UK, let me just summarise it very simply. In 2016, the UK people voted by a majority, 17.4 million to just over 16 million, to leave the European Union. The trouble is that Parliament has had 480 MPs out of 650 who are opposed to Brexit. Although most of them stood on manifestos which promised to honour the result of the referendum and take the UK out of the EU, including the Single Market and Customs Union, the truth is they didn't mean it. In other words, shock, our politicians largely lied. We have a people in general who wanted one thing, although a significant minority do not want it, and we had politicians who wanted another. Now, the problem is made even worse by the fact that the EU is not elected. The European Parliament is, but it's largely irrelevant. The people who are doing the deal, the people who have the power, the EU Commission and its acolytes, they're not elected, so they don't have to answer to any electorate. And that's it. There's just an impasse. The EU does not negotiate. It lays down rules. And we are going to find that this is going to be ongoing. We need to pray for our poor benighted country, because one of the things that this has shown is the absolute poverty of our leadership. And really, that is across the board. It doesn't matter the political party. And from my perspective, all of them, including the Scottish National Party, all of them have shown an incredible lack of leadership and guts, and they're not going to be able to stand up to the EU. My view is that I suspect that we will not really have any real significant break with the EU. But we'll see. I could be wrong, and we just continue to pray. We do need the wisdom of Solomon. Let's change the subject, and let me speak to those of you who are men. Do you suffer from the disease of toxic masculinity? Because that is becoming one of the key phrases of 2019. Well, Gillette, that company, I use their blades. They've been around for a long time. They're part of Procter & Gamble, a much larger multinational company. They've come up with an advert, and in the jargon of the day, it is so woke.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against sexual
harassment.
Toxic
masculinity.
Is this the best a man can get? Is it?
It's, in one, at one level, it's an advert for which there's a lot of good things. So, for example, it encourages us not to encourage bullying or mistreatment of women or anything like that. And, you know, when I first heard about it, I kind of put my head in my hands and thought, oh no. But when I watched it, I was actually quite impressed with it. I do have to say that.
And there will be no going back. Because we believe in the best in men.
Men need to hold other men accountable.
Smile, sweetie. Come on.
To say the right thing. To act the right way.
Bro, not cool, not cool.
Some already are.
However, there are lots of problems with it. Let me just mention some of them, and I can refer you to the article on the website as well. They've moved from the idea of Gillette, the best a man can get, in other words, the best shaving gear that you can get, to Gillette, the best a man can be, as though shaving off our beards or somehow following their philosophy was going to make us the best that we can be. But, well, let me say first of all, actually, I think some of the premises behind the message is great. I think misogyny, I think the abuse of women by men who have power is entirely wrong. I mean, the abuse of men is wrong as well, but there is a problem with the fact that men are generally physically stronger and that in most societies they have more social, political and economic power, and that is far too often used to abuse. And that can be true in the church as well. It certainly should not be. But my problem with this is an advert for a product, and yet they're doing it as a lifestyle thing. So we're basically now getting our morality through selling of products or moralizing through advertising. I do think also it's a bit hypocritical because Procter & Gamble are famous for their animal rights testing and their use of child labor. The advert as well is remarkable in this way. It's racist. Now, if I told you that there were 43 examples of male behavior, bad behavior, and of them, 42 were black men and one white, and there were 7 examples of good behavior, 5 of whom were white and 2 were black, you would be rightly outraged, except it's the other way around. 42 are white men, 1 black. And the 7 examples of good behavior, 5 are black and 2 are white. It does appear to me that this is reinforcing what I call the unholy trinity of Western society. That is, if you're white, working class, and male, you're pretty well at the bottom of the pile. And that's where this whole thing about toxic masculinity comes in, because the American Psychological Association has just issued guidelines saying that traditional masculinity is harmful to men, and that masculine traits such as risk-taking, competitiveness, and stoicism should be dealt with. I think that there's a problem with this whole advert. I think there's a problem with the way our society is going, and I think there's a better way to face these kind of gender issues. At the end of the advert, they say it's by challenging ourselves that we can get closer to our best. or it's by challenging ourselves to do more, actually, that we can get closer to do our best. I would like to suggest this, that it's by challenging ourselves to follow Jesus Christ that we can get closer to our best. I'd love to see Gillette put that in their next advert. And then on to an extraordinary story that comes from New York, where the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, has announced his support for a bill called the Reproductive Health Act, which would not only allow abortion on demand up to full term for anyone, but also enshrine it as part of the state's constitution. You need to stop and think about that. You need to stop and think about how barbaric that is. I've been critical and would continue to be critical of President Trump for some of his boorish behavior and some of the things that he does. But it's nothing compared to what this man has just announced. Abortion up to 9 months for anyone, and then they have the nerve to call it health. Health for who? Certainly not the health of the child. May God have mercy on the United States and God have mercy on us all. Do you remember this wedding last year?
From the Song of Solomon in the Bible. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. For love is as strong as death, passion fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, a raging flame. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it out. The late Dr. Martin Luther King once said, and I quote, "We must discover the power of love, the redemptive power of love. And when we do that, we will make of this old world a new world. For love, love is the only way."
Yep, when Bishop Michael Curry, the head of the Episcopal Church in the United States, spoke about love, 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 and the secular press went wild, and the liberal Christian press went wild, and many evangelicals said, "Oh, what a great gospel sermon, and wasn't it wonderful? It's all about love." Well, you shall know them by their fruits. Because this week, Bishop Michael Curry went against love. He went against Bishop William Love of Albany Diocese, who is refusing to perform same-sex marriages or allow anyone within his diocese to do so. And guess what? In the name of love, Bishop Curry is punishing Bishop Love. Speaking of Anglicanism, did you know that there was an Anglican group within Rome and official appointees to deal with the Roman Catholic Church? And the head of that Anglican centre in Rome has just been appointed by Archbishop Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, or at least the interim director, is a man called the Very Reverend Dr. John Shepherd. I've always wondered what you have to do to be a very reverend, and if it's just a reverend, or a very reverend, or a most reverend, or whatever. But never mind, anyway, that's not the point. The point is this, that this representative of the Anglican Church to the Roman Catholic Church is someone who denies the physical resurrection of Jesus. What is that about? How is that even possible? I love what Archbishop Cranmer in his blog says about this. "There's no point weeding out sinners and hypocrites from church leadership if you then appoint those who preach a false gospel which offers no hope of salvation and gives no one an assurance of anything." Well, amen to that. Now, we come on to something else. I was walking down the road, as I do with my headphones in, listening to Radio 4's Today's programme, when I came across this just unbelievable interview. Now, I don't think we'll be able to play you all of it, but we'll play you some of it. And the background to it is that there is a man called John Finnis, who's an Oxford academic, a lecturer in law, And he's written against homosexuality in the past. And there is a petition, as you would imagine, at the University of Oxford to try and get rid of him because of things that he said many, many years ago and views that he holds. And basically, he holds, he's a Catholic, and he holds to the view that homosexuality is not a natural act and that it is something that goes against God's law. You don't have to agree with that. I personally do, but you don't have to agree with it. But it's the idea of him being banned. And there was an interview with Suleiman Rahim, I think, who is the student union president. And it is single-handedly the worst interview I have ever heard. It makes Diane Abbott look positively articulate and intelligent in comparison. And what depressed me about it was, this is a guy who's head of the students' union in the most prestigious, Cambridge, the most prestigious university in the United Kingdom, one of the most prestigious in the world. He's probably going to end up, like his colleagues, running the country. And yet this was just so bad. Have a listen to some of it.
You know, it's very simply, oh, he's homophobic, let's get rid of him. This is a man who, when we talk about the ability to like separate academic and personal views, he said these in an academic context. This clearly influences the way he thinks and what he has the capacity to do. You know, in that he is a legal jurist, a legal philosopher, you know, he clearly has written against a lot of the enshrinement in law of the rights that gay people now have.
Yeah, but those are legitimate, acceptable views to have, aren't they, in wider society, particularly in a university. I mean, he might be wrong, but he can hold the views.
So I'm
stumped by the very idea that someone could hold views that are no longer fashionable and no longer perhaps acceptable in much of society, but still hold those views. Why shouldn't he be allowed to? It's freedom.
I don't seem stumped by that. I think that I seem stumped by the fact that people can't seem to understand that it's not necessarily about his hold. You know, this entire debate often gets framed in terms of offence when it rarely is. You know, I'm not sitting here being horrifically offended by everything. I'm thinking about the sort of real implications of what people say. You know, it's either academics have the capacity to influence things, and so we should be careful about because they have sort of a privileged position of power where they can influence things, where they're legitimated, where they have this sort of clout. And so, you know, we have to be careful about what we think the effects of their speech is.
Suleiman Rahim and Professor Dennis Hayes as well. Thank you both.
Okay, let me just say one or two things about this. He says, well, we're not to say he should be banned. That's what he says, whilst at the same time arguing for him to be banned. Now, it's not as if John Finnis is actually lecturing these things. He says, or he seeks to justify it by saying, well, if it was a Muslim, then these same people wouldn't be objecting. Well, let me turn that around and simply say, if it was a Muslim, and Muslims actually believe the same thing about homosexuality, then Mr. Finnis would not dare run the risk of being called Islamophobic. And he says, he might be wrong, but he can hold his views. Or that's what the interviewer says. He might be wrong, but he can hold these views. And Suleiman Rahim couldn't answer that. It seemed to him utterly astounding that someone could hold views that were wrong. You know, I think one of the most important points that was made in the discussion was the guy arguing for academic freedom, who just simply said this, that universities are supposed to be a learning institution, but they are becoming training institutions where students are inducted into correct ways of thinking. Ain't that the truth? Now, speaking of interviews, there was another extraordinary interview that same day on BBC Good Morning Scotland, where Colin McFarland of Stonewall Scotland was dealing with the question of LGBT depression, arguing that research, inverted commas, done by them has shown that 50% of LGBT people suffer from depression, and asking for the NHS to take account of that.
And we know that, LGBT people still on a day-to-day basis are subject to verbal and physical abuse. And we know that that has a profound impact on mental health and physical well-being. This 49%, 50% statistic was alarming, but probably isn't surprising that when LGBT people are facing that kind of discrimination at work, at school, in their communities, on their streets, that that's going to have a profound effect on their mental well-being.
Okay, there are all kinds of problems with this, but not least, I thought it was helpful in it shows how these things work. One of the big problems is, causation and correlation are not the same. But I think this is what happens. What you get is a lobbying organization, which is largely funded by government, then goes and lobbies the same government, gives a whole series of facts and figures, inverted commas, and gets more money and uses that money to do exactly the same thing. So they're asking for quality healthcare services, comprehensive and effective training, inclusive schools, work, and the Scottish government's given more than 1 million for this, want to work with NHS Scotland. Now, at one level, it does seem that, it's a good thing, isn't it? It's a good thing to help people who are struggling with depression. But okay, here, let me try this. What if I said 50% of Calvinists or 90% of Catholics suffer from depression? Can we have 1 million of government money? In fact, I've got quite a lot of depressed people that I'm connected with in my church. You know, that dour Calvinist thing? Why can't we have government money to help with that? Maybe we're depressed, not because of our theology, but maybe we're depressed because people keep attacking us and mocking us and abusing us and discriminating against us. Can we have government money, please? Can we make sure that everyone in the National Health Service understands Catholicism or understands Calvinism? Is it just lack of understanding? I think there's a lack of empathy for Christians. See, it's funny. Homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia, there's a zero-tolerance approach. Christophobia, or Catholic phobia, cathophobia, let's call it that, there's not a zero-tolerance approach. I think the whole interview indicates something that is profoundly unjust and unfair and wrong in our culture. And finally, let's turn to something that's kind of sad news, but also something that makes me feel very proud as a Scot, and that is the potential retirement of Andy Murray from tennis, who at the Australian Open this week announced that because of injury, he was hoping that Wimbledon might be his last, but it looks as though Melbourne will be. But what a match he played. Andy Murray, for me, is a hero. His temperament is often mocked, and yet I think it's marvellous. His commitment to the game, I think his sportsmanship. There's just so many things I admire about him. And even hearing that emotional press conference was just very, very moving. Maybe we shouldn't get too excited about these things, but I will never forget the first time that he won Wimbledon. It really was fantastic. Sport can give so much pleasure to people. Okay, going to love you and leave you in the midst of a hectic week. And I leave you with a quote of the week from the programme on Channel 4, the drama called An Uncivil Brexit, which I thought was quite remarkable and has the lead character, Dominic Cummings, saying this at the end.
There is a systems failure in this country and across the West. We're languishing, we're drifting without a vision or a purpose. What do you do usually when there's a systems failure? You reset, and that's all I did. I reset. And what did they do? What did all of you do? You rebooted the same operating system, the same tired old politics of short-termism and self-serving, small-thinking bullshit.
But are you not part of the same culture, Mr. Cummings?
No.
Of half-truths, well, easy answers, false promises.
Yes, yes, don't think that I don't know I'm as bad as the rest of them, that that's what the system does, the virus, it infects. But I was hoping, just praying that someone, anyone with the minimalist amount of, even a modicum, an ounce of imagination or vision or Jesus Christ aspiration could see that there was the opportunity for something to to actually happen, for someone to step in and do something to make a change, to just...
Well, we thank the Lord that Jesus did step in and did make a change. God bless you and see you next week.